Welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast, featuring advice and interviews about athlete branding. Learn how marketing, public relations, and broadcasting can grow your brand. We also have special episodes to talk about recent news, events, and anything in the world of sports. The podcast is sponsored by Pliable, a versatile marketing, PR, and broadcasting company that identifies opportunities and creates tailored content for its clients. Now it's time to roll. Here's your host, Greg Glenn.
Thank you and welcome as we get ready for this episode. Today we're going to be talking about training for elite athletes and what it takes to achieve success at the highest level. Today's guest is Tyler Jewell, an Olympian, also a lacrosse player for Division I with Boston College and Lincoln Sudbury. Both of us had a great experience there. And Tyler is certainly somebody to keep an eye on. He's got an amazing story. After graduating from Boston College as a D1 lacrosse player, Tyler was a 12-time member of the United States National Snowboard Team and competed in both the Torino and Vancouver Winter Olympic Games. In 2013, Tyler earned Certified Strength and Conditioning Specialist and USA Weightlifting certifications. After years of building a foundation from the athlete's perspective, he gained practical coaching experience at the Naval Tactical Athlete Program and the United States Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs and the Red Bull High Performance Training Center, working directly with 300-plus elite national and international athletes spanning across 108 disciplines. Got to bring the energy today with a guy who knows how to work for Red Bull. Tyler, welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast.
Greg, you just gave me the chills. You're good at what you do, man. That was a great introduction. It's an honor to be here.
Awesome. I am so excited that you're here because, you know, with my first question usually to my guests is, growing up, who was your favorite athlete and why? And I think that, you know, the time that we both spent, obviously, at Lincoln Sudbury has shaped both of us. And wanted to kind of just touch base on that as, you know, you grew up as a kid. You know, who was your athlete that you were looking to?
Oh, gosh, there's so many athletes and posters on my walls. I would say the one that had the biggest impact on me was Dan Jansen, who is a speed skater. And his story through the Olympics, how he just wouldn't quit. I mean, he went and fell. And then he went to another Olympics and fell. And it's the only person actually during opening ceremonies at the Olympics, you see everyone's checking each other out and it's all the best athletes in the nation. And then on a bigger stage of the world, and there's Dan Jansen. And I knew immediately, like, oh, I got a little starstruck. And I never do, you know, because I've worked with a lot of high-end athletes and it's always like, yeah, we're peers, you know, and play it cool. But with him, it's like, dude, can I have my picture with you? You know, what he personifies of never quitting. And then in the end, he actually, I believe, I could have it wrong, I haven't thought about it for a long time, but I think it was his third Olympic sort of go, and he fell in the event that he was supposed to win. And then he had one more event that he wasn't supposed to do well in, and he won his gold medal. I mean, and it's he's been through so much with his sister being sick from cancer and then passing away like right before one of the Olympics. And it was this incredible to meet someone like that who had an impact on you when you were a kid. And I would say he's in the top of my, you know, favorite athletes that had a big impression on me.
Well, certainly everybody likes a good comeback story. And, you know, we all go through adversity as athletes. So speaking of that, I know that you going to Lincoln Sudbury, you know, you were a typical kind of teenage athlete. Then you had, like you described to me, a wrist injury here and kind of started to get involved in some conditioning at a young age. Talk to me about that, because it seemed like that may have shaped how you decided to go in your career path.
Absolutely. Yeah, like most kids, I was lost in high school, skinny, insecure, pimples on my face, not really doing well in school, struggling. It turns out I had done some testing and they told me I was dyslexic. And I thought, what the heck is that? That just means I'm not smart. And then once it was explained to me, I was told, like, hey, here's your IQ scores. You're actually very intelligent. You just process information differently. And once I realized it wasn't a disability and it was just a learning difference, that made a big change for me. But with that perfect storm of that going on and then not being physically fit the way that I wanted to be and having this broken hand from football, I was really down. And my folks, my mom, she never quit on me. She's the best. And she got me visits with a personal trainer, something that people didn't do in that time in the early 90s, mid to early 90s. And I got the visits with him. I had my 2 weeks. And then, you know, my mom said, okay, that's it. And then I was caddying and I saved some money. And, you know, then I was paying on my own. And
Where were you caddying?
At Nishada Country Club.
You and me both. You and me both have that in common.
So I ended up working there for years on the grounds crew. And
so I replaced divots to earn my DCI irons to play on the high school golf team.
We were probably working together.
Probably, man. Oh my gosh. That's a great story.
So where was I? So yeah, I would just say in a nutshell, this person, his name is Victor Terra. He had the biggest impact on my life outside of my family, really. I went in this sort of very bad state, and I came out feeling like a man. You know, it was the perfect timing in my life where I was starting to mature and weightlifting was finally going to work. You know, I'd been trying to weightlift on my own, but my body wasn't ready for that. I probably would have been better focusing on more coordinative tasks, which something I am very grateful for, that I got into gymnastics as a young age. So that sets such a great foundation on those coordinative abilities and flexibility, core strength, mobility. And so, you know, it would be funny. Like sometimes we go to the rocks and ropes course. I remember it was one of my favorite things at LS back in the woods there. And I was the only one who could get through this suspended tire, but it wasn't because I was special. It was just because I had the opportunity to develop my body in a certain way that the others didn't. And I knew how to move in space. And I luckily got focus in the direction of gaining these coordinative tasks and abilities at a young age when the window for that to be learned is really open. And then as we start to mature, that window starts closing for those coordinative tasks. Not that it's closed, but it starts closing a little bit. And it's harder because we're growing and we're having a hard time knowing where our body is in space. But then that's when the opportunity to start training comes into play. So I was right in that sweet spot, and I just, you know, put on 10 pounds over 2 months, all muscle, and came into my lacrosse season where not much was expected of me, and ended up being MVP of the team. We lost in Eastern Mass Finals to Newton North, which was a heartbreak. We probably should have won, and then they went on to smash long medal. So that was essentially the state championship there. But I just, you know, I'll never forget. Like, that was a huge impact. And now over the last 12 weeks, I've just been doing some training sessions with the LS lacrosse team, and I had essentially 30 players. I had two groups of 10 and one group of 8. And watching that transformation of most of these young athletes, it was so special. It was so, you know, a couple of times I got emotional. I had to just check myself, but realizing I'm sort of looking at myself and being able to give back that gift that was given to me is just such a pleasure and so rewarding and an honor, really.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. And as you look at your career, obviously we, you know, LS program, very esteemed program with Coach Vana. I know there's a lot of people that have probably impacted your career. Do you feel like you have two or three mentors you'd like to be able to mention here that really had that big impact?
Yes, absolutely. You know, Greg, I've been so lucky for every stage of my life. I call it more of a guide, you know, than a mentor, but I've had so many guides in my life, and namely my parents. You know, I already said my mom was my trainer for a long time. We were trying to get faster, and we got platform shoes, and we're doing it out in the streets in Sudbury during winter, probably going to kill myself to the hallways in LS. And then when she realized maybe I had outgrown that scenario we had created, that she got me visits with Victor. And then I've been so great through the U.S. ski and snowboard team. A mentor of mine, Per Lundstrom, he was the best. He was actually the ski trainer, but I knew he was the guy for me. And he ended up just taking on that workload with me and trained me, which then he's the one who I was always in touch with saying, Per, you know, finishing up as an athlete. He had since gone from the U.S. ski and snowboard team to working at Red Bull. And that's how I got in there. I watched a documentary, it was years ago, so I won't have all the facts straight, but there was someone who was representing a musician, and he wanted this musician to play at a venue, but the venue wouldn't have the musician. And so this person who was representing the artist kept calling, and it was over the course of like 6 years. He called once a month, and they just became buddies. And finally, the guy said, you know what? Your artist can come play at the venue. And that's what I did to Pear over the years. Like, hey, man, I want to learn from you. You're going to teach me a lot. I need to continue learning from you. Now that I'm on the other side of the fence, like, I know what to do for athletes, but I need to learn the why. And that was a huge part for me of why I went out to Red Bull. I had started my own business doing what I'm doing now. I don't know what year that was. It was 8-9 years ago. It was right after I had finished working my internship at the USOC, started my own business with Victor, who trained me, who was doing that, who is still doing that. So I'm full circle back with Victor doing what I was always wanting to do. But I had this little detour to Red Bull High Performance where I knew that that was an education I couldn't get anywhere else. Mm. And I thought, okay, I've got this opportunity. I've been bugging Perrick. Where can I come learn from you? I said, we'll take you for 6 months. So I actually had used all my money towards snowboarding. The wheels had fallen off with my athlete career, and it was time to kind of hang it up. Although I never officially retired because that was too hard for me, but I was retired living at home with my folks. And I just thought, okay, I let me work for 3 weeks so I can afford a plane ticket to get out there. And so then I had my plane ticket out there. I was sleeping on couches, couldn't even find rent straight away. And I thought, it's going to be a sprint. It's 6 months. I'll do what I need to do. And then suddenly it's 3 years, and then 8 years later, you know, just nose to the grindstone. We would work crazy hours, and it was the time of my life. It was great. But starting to realize, like, hey, I've got family, and I'm not seeing them, and it's time to get home. And it was hard because I had such a strong connection with all the athletes I was working with, and still do, still in touch with most of them, and or if not all of them. But it's really exciting to get all that information and all that knowledge and that time at Red Bull High Performance, which frankly, at the time when I was there, I see it as one of the best sports performance programs in the world, definitely in the country. Really doing cutting edge stuff and asking very important questions and then trying to solve those questions and pushing the limit with athletes and the best athletes. And so what we can do when we work with the best athletes is backtrack how they got there and learn from that whole process. Anyways, I'm finally back home. I'm with my family, which means so much. And it snowed out today, which I've missed so much. Snow coming as a winter athlete, it brought great reciprocity to my life to be in summer all the time. And learning to surf was something really special to me. But it's so great to be back here and have seasons. And it's just everything always happens for a reason. I believe that. And I've had so many mentors. I get a little long-winded. Excuse me, Greg, but even now I've got buddies from my sixth grade best friend, Todd Fryett, who's, you know, gone to law school, runs his own business. He's like, this is what you have to do for your business. And tell him, or Jay Wren, who I went to LS with and BC with, here's how you run business. And they're all nurturing me and hey, let's meet up for a game of darts or whatever. And it's so great to have this network of just solid friends. I think Sudbury, Lincoln, Sudbury, the Metro West area is a special place, you know, and I was bragging to my parents about all the LS kids I worked with and how awesome they were. And they're showing up at 5:45 a.m. No one's late and they work and no one's complaining. The poor guys got masks on and they're killing themselves. And no one complained once. I'm just so impressed by them. They said, well, what do you think? The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. It's good people here, you know? It's so great to be in this environment. And I'm not dinging anywhere else, but I just really appreciate this culture here and the communities here.
It's a special place. Yeah, it's definitely a special place. And a shout out to Mike Lopez, you know, who's another one of those LS grad that was there at the 6 a.m. Workouts back when he was there. And now here he is, you know, the National Football League. So it speaks to character. Yeah. So I think that's pretty impressive.
By the way, Mr. Lopez was hands down one of my favorite coaches. He's the man. I was just sharing a story. One time he was yelling at me, get away from me. Cause I pretty much did a Happy Gilmore. I fouled out of our game. I had unnecessary roughness, like 4 or 5 penalties against Penn. Only time we ever lost against Penn. I said, coach, I'm in the box. I can't get away from you. Go to the other side of the box. it was always done with love. He pulled me aside, like, what was it? Maybe sophomore year, put his arm around me. We're walking back from football practice, said, you know, I'm going to be hard on you. And that's because I like you, you know, and that's all it took. And having those mentorship moments, that is really what it's all about. He was using the vehicle of a football. I'm using the vehicle of strength and conditioning, but we're just trying to give on knowledge to the next generation and help people be their best, you know, help them reach their greatest potential, right? And it's such an honor to be doing that.
Yeah, I love that story. That's a great example of Coach Lopez, certainly, where you did great work. Let's talk about your personal brand and your athlete brand. I love the fact that you obviously work for Red Bull, which is one of the strongest athlete brands that's out there, especially when it comes to extreme sports. Talk to me about that experience, because I feel like that helped you grow your athlete brand coming off of obviously all your athletic success.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, I have a lot to learn from you, Greg, and just in our pre-warm-up, like, oh, I'm scribbling notes, that the PPP that you have, you know, the, what was it, potential personality and
passion.
Passion. Man, so I've always just viewed it as I'm going to be who I am, and that's the only way I know how to be. And even through media training, and I got taught a couple of times where I was open and honest. I can remember at the Olympics saying, you know, how my dad said, hey, we're going skiing. From Thanksgiving to Easter, every year we would go skiing. And it was like, wait, I want to go to Jimmy's birthday party. No, you're going skiing. Well, and that's all that the media person took from that story. But then I went on to say, actually, it was the best thing ever. My dad was giving me a gift that took me around the world and allowed me now to be an Olympian that I didn't know. This was early specialization happening, but it was really just his passion for skiing, and this is what the family was doing. The media outlet took Tyler Jewell was forced by his dad to go skiing every weekend. And it was like, that's not what I was saying at all.
Yeah.
And then I realized, okay, you can't always just be yourself. You have to watch out because it might get twisted in the wrong way. So through Red Bull going there, and I've always made it I made a pact to myself, and probably from a young age, I remember very few conversations with my dad, more he was always leading by example, but he said, Tyler, integrity is the most important thing. And I took that to heart. Somehow that lesson stuck with me almost to a flaw, where it's a bad thing where, you know, yeah, honey, do I look big in these pants? Like, oh, darn it. Like, you know, but I always just believe being straight and having integrity in the long run, it's good. But sometimes you need to learn how to not give everything and withhold some information. Yeah. And that's something I learned at Red Bull, because it is a marketing company. It's not a national governing body where it's like, hey, our only job is to get these athlete medals. I mean, it took me a long time to get used to it, because there would be athletes who were being pushed out because their social media following wasn't as good as someone else, even though the results were better, you know? Mm. And so, and not the fault of Red Bull. Red Bull is an amazing company. There are values that Red Bull stands for behind the scenes that I never knew about till I was working there, that the owner, or that the founder rather, Dietrich Mateschitz, is an incredible person. We're sitting in meetings and they're pushing through, we need to do fishing, you know? And then the founder, Mr. Mateschitz, he doesn't believe in cruelty to animals. He doesn't want to do it. And it's like, this could stand to make however many more millions of what they're making. Right. But he's basically saying, just because we can rob the bank doesn't mean we should. You know, and he's, you know, what I'm taking, I've never talked to him. I've met his son, and he's a very awesome guy, and we became good friends. But outside of that, there's these morals of no cruelty to animals. We don't want.
Well, there's that integrity factor again. You know, just brought up integrity, and they're going to stick to the values. I think that's important.
Which isn't public facing. So there's a list of those things. It's like, holy smokes, that's incredible, right? And so learning that about marketing, of sticking to your guns, keeping your passion. And I really see Red Bull as the Robin Hood for action sport athletes. It's not, hey, let's go get a piece of LeBron James's big toe, who doesn't really care because his bank account's so full, he probably doesn't even know how much money he has, you know, versus here's an athlete who's really struggling to make ends meet, who's a kayaker or an alpine snowboarder, or we work with a chess player, wingsuit flyers, all these crazy athletes that are really good at what they do and can really benefit from, you know, a decent amount of support, or a minimal amount of support for that matter. So I think, you know, sorry, I get long winded and I get so excited about these topics, but it's such a cool company and how they operate and what they're doing. And it was a great learning process. And with that said, I like to think that I don't market myself and I just be myself, but I have learned a lot and learned how you know, like maybe taking a video during a session to be able to then show others what you're doing. I always worked in a vacuum and like, no, that will take away from the session to step back and shoot a video. But actually it's worth it in the long run to be able to allow others to see, because if you're only working in this vacuum and no one else can see what you're doing, then no one's ever going to know. And
yeah, the chronology is important. A lot of people lose sight of that. It's not necessarily the podium that matters. It's the journey of getting there. And I think that a lot of people forget that.
Yes, absolutely. It's like, well, it's hard for a young athlete. You want to win. And that's ingrained. And that's the hard side of communities that we grew up in too. There's always, you got to take the good with the bad. And it's like, what sticker can I put on the back of my car? What college am I going to get into? I'm nervous I'm not getting into any colleges. And finally, I can put the Boston College sticker on there. But no one's saying that. There's no outward pressure, but it's all underlying. There's a lot of pressure on, you know, and I felt it as a kid, and I see that it's built even more now. And that's a big piece too of trying to pop that bubble, getting some of these young guys in over the winter. And just, I couldn't imagine what it'd be like to be going through COVID. And I, what music do you guys want? We like Little Baby. It was a little aggressive music, but let's blast it. Let's let them let their energy out. Let's give them an opportunity to sort of squelch some of that pressure and using the training session towards that. Yes, we're trying to lay a foundation so they're fit for their season, but how can we blow out some of this stress that has to be building up from COVID and all these other things?
Yeah.
You know? And I like to have a lot of those underlying themes within baked into the training. Sure, we're doing the training that is really going to get you best for your athletic season coming up or future seasons. But there's always those underlying things that you can weave into the training to help either alleviate stress, build confidence. They're all going towards that. And whatever, I really like to study people and learn what makes them tick and then weaving that into the training as well.
Yep, that makes sense. Now, I got to ask you, obviously, being an Olympian, did you have a favorite Olympics or a favorite Olympic moment even, you know, from your career?
Yeah. You know, I always thought the Olympics were the Olympics, and they're not. Everyone is so unique and different. And I feel so fortunate I got to go to two to learn that. And in Bardonecchia, opening ceremonies, I was sitting, that's it, in 2006 Olympics. Everyone knows that it's Torino, but the snowboarders were in Bardonecchia. Opening ceremonies, I was sitting on a 2x4 on cinder blocks. I couldn't see the show. I thought, this is interesting. But then when I pulled out of start gate, the snow was perfect. Time stood still. I remember seeing all the gatekeepers standing there. The venue was perfect. And it was just amazing, right? It was the best snowboard turns I've ever felt in my life. Fast forward to Vancouver, opening ceremonies. We were in a stadium, my own seat underneath the seat where it's deer antlers. We were part of the show. I could see everything. I saw Neil Young playing, but the venue was atrocious. You know, it was in a coastal town. The snow, it was the wrong, you know, it's just like they were struggling to get snow, and they spray painted the snow with some firefighting stuff because it was all black and they needed to make it look white. It was raining. It was the type of rain that you go to the next building. You don't stay out. And it's like you run from one building to the next.
Right. But,
you know, so, and you can't, it's an outdoor sport. You can't really control those things. If you get a bad weather spell, you got to deal with it and you've got to adapt. My point being is they all have their own special things. And I mean, if there's one thing that's probably very consistent about all Olympics is that opening ceremonies and standing with all of the best in the nation and chanting USA, US. Like, I'm still getting the chills from that this day out. That's a moment I'll never forget. And walking out into opening ceremonies with all this crowd and all these people, and you're representing your country. There's nothing better than that.
That's awesome. And I've worked with Olympian Julia Klucki, who was a luge athlete and competed there as well in the Olympics. And I think that it's so important, I think, for athletes to understand what happens after the Olympics. So a lot of people, especially when they have a strong brand, they can go on and do great things, right? If you're those elite level athletes. But most Olympic athletes actually struggle after the Olympics because you're not getting the big endorsements. You've worked so hard your entire life. And once that, you know, moment is over, what is that like?
Oh, Greg, it's hard. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. That's brutal. Like, it, you know, there's an analogy I'll use, and I think there's a book and even a movie called Straw Dogs, but in the Japanese culture, they spend a long time building these straw sculptures, and they I mean, it's like their heart and soul goes into that, and it's put on stage, and they have this big ceremony, and they're there, and everyone is really admiring the straw sculptures, right? And then the day after that ceremony, that straw is in the streets. It's broke down, and it's you know, it's laying in the gutter, you know, and that's pretty tough to say, and that is the reality, and it's hard. And even you know, all your family members and friends, everyone's reaching out. And there's a moment after the Olympics where, you know, you're asked to do interviews and go see some things, but, and it's to no one's fault. It's just the nature of the beast where there's all this excitement around it. And by the way, you've been building 4, 8, 12 years, however many cycles towards that moment, right? And so you put your whole life to it. And in anything in life, when it comes to an end, it's hard to deal with, right? And so it's not like, oh, we shouldn't do the Olympics. It's just part of it. You have to take the good with the bad, but you are hitting the nail on the head and really smart to be thinking, how can we deal with that? How can we better manage that situation where people aren't so banged up after? I mean, we would feel it after even a season, right? It's like, you're traveling the world. You're with your best friends. You're hanging with people, the other Austrian team, the Japanese team, the Slovenians. And it's just the time of your life. But then you're also completely fried. Your body is like done. You've been through all these different time zones. So naturally there's going to be a dip already. Just physiologically, you're in this sort of hole and you need to pay back the bill that you've been doing. Like,
yeah. What is
it? If you want to dance, you got to pay the band, right? And so it's time to pay the band at the end of the season. And that gets magnified by, you know, Olympics and all that. And then that's all over.
We're continuing to speak here with Tyler Jewell. And Tyler, obviously, we have been able to see a lot of athletes over the years take their game to another level. Obviously, physical conditioning has changed, the way that players train, the way they really develop and look at their bodies differently over the last 5 to 10 years, especially with recovery. Has been a big part of the way athletes are really building their physique, but also they're thinking about the long term. I mean, how can you not when you see a guy like Tom Brady at 44 and he's still figuring it out? Talk to me about, you know, some of the ways that, you know, you're seeing athletes try and really invest in themselves physically.
Well, first and foremost, the lane I'm in is strength and conditioning and seeing athletes committing and understanding it's not just, oh, I'm just going to do one training session and then I'm good. And they understand that it takes a lot of time and commitment and you really need to stay consistent. It's not so much about, oh, great, I did one awesome training session and now I'm ready for the season. They're starting to understand it. I put out a Google form to every athlete before I work with them or anybody. It doesn't necessarily have to be an athlete. But I specifically ask, what are your goals? And then how long do you think it's going to take for you to reach them? So already just by asking that question, I'm planting the seed where they understand, wow, okay, this is going to be a process. There's no, you know, a friend of mine one time said, yeah, you were an overnight success in 10 years. There's no such thing as an overnight success, I don't believe.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, with this generation coming up is, you know, they are what I like to call the TikTok generation. It's now. It's what can I do now? How fast is it going to happen? And you know, when am I going to get my results? Like, you know, it's like it's so fast. They have this craving for, obviously, that example is more about content. But the idea about how fast things can happen is something you must see quite a bit. The one thing I wanted to kind of wrap up here with, obviously, with your career and what you've been able to do, I'm curious from your travels, from your experience as an athlete, what do you think is the best advice, you know, that you could probably give to an athlete today?
Yeah, I think it really depends on the athlete. There's so many variables and checking in what's most important for that person and understanding them. But if I have to give a blanket statement, I would say that the number one thing is finding your passion first. You know, we talked about, we can feel the passion when you're announcing, right? Like, I love interacting with anybody who wants to reach a goal. Find that passion. And then when you have that, then you're really going to be able to steer everything in the right direction where it will no longer be very hard to commit to that because you're passionate about it. And then once you have that, I would say you never quit. And so there's going to be two groups of people. Someone says, I know what my passion is. I want to do this sport. And then there's someone who says, I don't really know. And they're both equally as cool because that person who doesn't know, they get to explore everything. They get to go try baseball, basketball, softball, soccer, lacrosse, ice hockey, and then they find it. Or they might say, you know what? I like playing the clarinet, and that's cool too. Whatever you find that you really enjoy, I think then you're in the right direction, and then you go at it as hard as you can, and then you stay consistent with it, and you just don't quit. If you're truly passionate about it, it won't be too hard to do those things.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Actually, this leads to a good question. What about athletes now that are finding themselves trying to specialize in a sport, right? So when we grew up in high school, we were probably playing, you know, 2, maybe 3 sports. Are you starting to see a trend where, you know, in order to really excel at a sport, are kids having to pick a sport earlier?
It seems so, Greg. Absolutely. I feel so lucky. I grew up in a different era where I got to do so many different sports and get exposed to gymnastics at a young age, which set a great platform for me to do other things. Although I always had this background of ski racing, and that ski racing, that touch and feel I learned for the snow translated into snowboarding very nicely for me. So sometimes if you can kind of develop skills in other areas that will set the table for you to excel maybe in something else down the line, I think it is beneficial, because at a certain stage, if you haven't started a sport at that age, or if you're not gaining the skills towards what's needed for that sport, you're going to be behind the eight ball. With that said, you know, we know early specialization works. And now I've had the opportunity to work with, you know, multiple high level athletes who have benefited from early specialization, but they also then have these sport specific sort of injury nagging things that are getting them. Let's say if you're a snowboarder or surfer, where you're in this asymmetrical sport, and so then your back is developed asymmetrically and leading to some back issues. And so maybe if you spend some time away from the sport and invest in that foundation in your physical body, when you have that skill set that's built out through that early specialization, it's going to shine brighter in the long run, instead of, well, you're shining bright, but you're banged up, and actually that's letting that skill set, or not allowing that skill set to shine as bright as it could, if you follow me. So it's a little bit almost like, hey, you started your 401k or investing at a young age, and the dividends, it's just paying off. And I'm probably speaking wrong about that, but I like the analogy where you're really putting in this investment up front, and it pays off big time in the long run. Yeah. Same thing with your physical body. I believe that to be true. Okay. But I was recently, I was actually listening to it, so I wasn't reading it, but it's a book on tape. And it talked about an airplane taking off in Los Angeles, and it's aiming for Washington, D.C. And if that nose of that plane changed by 3 degrees on the runway, no one would notice. But when it takes off, it would end up in New York City instead of Washington, D.C. It's that
people would notice.
Yeah, exactly. That's when you're true. But the point is, if you can start with these small changes at a young age, it's going to be a lot it's going to be a lot bigger payoff in the long run, where it just seems like, oh, it's just once a week and we're just learning some coordinative abilities and working on mobility. But then it's just, I think, is going to go up and really pay off in the long run. You'll see bigger changes if you get them in earlier on, right?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I actually think that brings up a good point here with athlete branding, which is obviously all this talk about name, image, and likeness. It, to me, as an athlete brand advisor, the earlier that I can work with an athlete to identify their passions and identify the things that make them unique, I really think, to your point, is the earlier you can identify those things, the stronger brand you're actually going to be able to build.
Absolutely. I mean, it's across the board, because you get to a higher level faster, whether it's not in your branding or your training or your sport, and then you're building from there, right? You're building from a much more robust platform. With that said, you'd like to have some balance to things and not overdo it. But we see it. Tiger Woods. I mean, my favorite is the Marinovich story, where, you know, the dad was stretching him in the crib and then everything was great, but he had never had a Twinkie before. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but he went off the rails because he was so one-sided and he had no balance to it that it didn't work out for him in the long run.
Yep. No, that makes sense. All right. So awesome information. I have really enjoyed our interview, Tyler. You are full of really good, insightful information and also advice here for athletes as they try and really develop their bodies and their mindset to be an elite athlete. I'd love to help people understand, how can they get in touch with you, and kind of what are the typical services that, you know, you are seeing right now?
So to get in touch with me would be through my website, athletictutor.co, or I'm also on Instagram, same handle, @athletictutor.co. You can kind of reach me through either of those. So common service for me is obviously a one-on-one, or it's starting to become more groups. And I think people like that just because as the number goes up, the rate goes down per individual. So that's a little more cost effective for people. I think both are great. individual sessions, or you can really drill down on that individual and give them exactly what they need for their goals. As you start going into groups, you start losing some of that individualism, but what you lose in individualism, you gain in group synergies. And suddenly, oh, he or she did that, I'm going to do that. And so you can kind of push each other that way. So I think both serve great purposes. I have a gym that I'm sharing with some friends of mine, and it's over in Acton on 20 Main Street. It used to be the old paper store headquarters, just on the border of Maynard and Acton. But I also do offer virtual services. I do programming for people, and it can all the way be from, okay, let's meet for, you know, an hour. Let's get to know each other. Let's set the goals out. What's your timeline? And then giving someone, you know, I'm working with someone right now, said, okay, I want you to program for me for the next 2 years. But that's the way sometimes you need to think. And that's how we thought as Olympians, where we'd have 4 year cycles, right? And so we'd be building each year, but you could have, and it's called periodization, but you could have a 4 year cycle all the way down to within 1 week, you might, or within even one session, a little kind of micro cycle like that versus a macro cycle. But at the end of the day, I'm super happy to just help people reach their goals. And if they want to work hard and they have that passion there, or if they need to some help and guidance to find a passion, I'm all about it. And I think there's so many different ways to train that it's really, I take pride in finding a way that the individual enjoys that training. You know, strength and conditioning or exercise shouldn't be punishment. I always thought that was strange. Like, the whole team lost and now everyone's going to run to the park. Like, no, that's when they should go home and eat a bowl of ice cream and watch a good movie, a funny movie, and feel better. Not, yeah, I'm going to kick you while you're down. Yeah. I had a sports psychologist one time. He taught me that. And he said, I really would like you to reverse how, because he knew our world of ski and snowboard. And of course, we're adults and we go out and have some adult beverages. And it would probably, when we would win, we'd go out and do that and celebrate, right? And then we would never pay attention to why we won. And then when we didn't do well, we go home and watch the video over and over and try to study it. And he said, I would ask the opposite. When you do really well, I think you should go home, write in your journal, figure out why you did well, and then you have a blueprint for next time, right? And when you do bad, you actually should you know, go out and celebrate with your friends anyways, right? And have a good time and try to forget about it. And that really stuck with me. I think there's a piece of that. And so, okay, I got a little off track, but I think it's very important that training is fun. So if I have the best training program in the world and it's all on rollerblades and I'm working with lacrosse players and they think rollerblades aren't cool, well, then the training's not going to work. It doesn't matter if it's scientifically proven and there's all sorts of research. It's not going to work because they don't like it, right? But if I find a way like, oh, we're going to go out on the water and row. I'm just thinking of something out there. But they really like rowing. Well, then it's going to stick. And I'm hitting, I might lose a little bit on what I'm after for the adaptation, but it doesn't matter if I'm getting zero adaptation because they don't want to do it or they just stop coming, right? So a big piece is meeting people where they are, understanding them and where their desires are. There's a million ways to train yourself. Let's just keep that analogy, aerobic fitness or anaerobic fitness. We can do bike, we can do rower, we can do a stepper, we can go outside, we can do hills. I mean, there's so many different things. So I find it's very important to line up with where that person's at and matching them and giving them something they enjoy so they can stay consistent. Because again, what we touched on earlier, if you don't stay consistent, you're not going to have that adaptation. And really what we're looking for is a consistent stress to allow the adaptations we're looking for.
That makes sense. All right. Well, that is going to wrap up this episode with Tyler Jewell again from athletictutor.co. You can check him out online. And Tyler, thanks for coming on the podcast and keep up the great work.
Thank you, Greg. It's been an honor. I've learned a lot from you and just our little interaction here. I look forward to picking your brain more.
All right. Sounds good, everybody. I'm Greg Glenn. Glad you could tune in. Stay pliable, my friends.
Thanks for listening to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes from today's episode and catch up on recent episodes at pliablemarketing.com. We also encourage you to share topics and guest ideas by emailing our production staff at pliablemarketing@gmail.com. We love hearing from our loyal listeners and athletes who want to grow their brand. So jump in and be part of the podcast, because that's how we roll.